Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. And with me is Adam Kunz, the man, the myth, the legend.
Good morning again.
Head of trading, and he helps me on portfolios. So good morning. All right. How was your weekend?
Very good.
Yeah.
Couldn't beat the weather.
Whoa. We got a lot to unpack again today. So we've got the Fed announcement. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got some volatility in the equity market. We're going to cover that. Obviously the credit markets.
Yeah.
And then we got to talk about what's going on in international and then how we are going to start to look at international and how that changes in our portfolio models. So, and then if you got anything else, Adam, that you want to raise, but let me start with the Fed announcement last week and what's going on in the economy. So the economy, we can't overestimate this or underestimate this. This economy is really in trouble. And we're working through two experiments right now that we have no roadmap for. First, dealing with a pandemic and then the impact that has on the economy. And then second is the aggressive use of monetary policies to help support the economy. And these go back to 2008 during the financial crisis, which some would argue that we never fully recovered from. So we've got these aggressive monetary policies where the Fed is using its balance sheet. And the Fed comes out last week at their regular Federal Open Market Committee meeting. And Powell indicates that he has a change in the policy statement and they're going to let the inflation run hot. He didn't use that word, but he's going to let inflation run over 2% and drift higher. And what this really means, I think, is not only will the average short-term interest rates stay low for long, which is what the Fed indicated to, I think, 2024, but also that they're going to keep these policies in place until the rate of unemployment again falls down to 4%, which at the current rate could be in eternity. And we've always said that the key to this economic recovery remains the employment picture. And right now, so the employment numbers last week were pretty good.
They were.
So we saw almost 900,000 people go back to work, 916,000 people who stopped receiving unemployment benefits. That was the number of the decline. And but the bad news is we still have 12.6 million people that are collecting unemployment benefits and are out of work. So the kind of the wild card remains what fiscal stimulus plan will be put in place prior to the election, because the bantering back and forth between both parties is that the Republicans have said we're willing to live without a plan. The economy's doing just fine. The Democrats want a really big plan. So I think our base case has been we think there's a rational decision would be to have a stimulus plan prior to the election. So if it becomes political, that may be an issue, but still the base case is we should see something. So more of the same, I think, in terms of just the economy. However, heading into this fourth quarter now, we go into a season where the consumer spending becomes really important with the holiday shopping season.
Yep.
So what's really been supporting the market is it's amazing what home prices have done in a pandemic. So it's been and then the second homes, the purchases of second homes have been amazing also. That goes in, the same, it's probably in the same spirit as buying RVs, which you'll never catch me dead in one. But all right, with that, let's turn it over. Let's talk about equities.
So it's going to be a tough open this morning. It's like Dow is going to be about 600 points down. And largely that's driven by the news that came out overnight with a report that many of the big banks have been essentially helping organizations, illegal organizations, get money, flow money through the banking system. So it's $2 trillion is what they're saying. Deutsche Bank is the...
You're talking about money laundering.
Yes.
There's no easy way to say that.
So that's shaking things up a bit. And overall, I would say just volatility is here in the market and here to stay. The VIX is well above 30 at this point. And last week we were down again. So that was 3 weeks in a row that both the S&P and the NASDAQ have been negative week over week. But both indexes are still up here today. So it's important to remember that and where we're coming from. International markets, we'll dig into more, are still down year over year. If they're developed, they're down 4.5%. And then we are seeing marginal, positive returns out of emerging markets. But if you take out China, they are down almost 10% year to date. So really, China is kind of like the U.S. as in developed markets is propping the whole thing up. So volatility is here. And I think as we go into election season and all the uncertainty that's surrounding that, and then compound that with what you just said, this fact that stimulus cannot really be landed upon, and it's going to be tough for the Republicans to say, yes, we need stimulus at the same time, messaging that the economy is doing just fine. And then thirdly is obviously the vaccine, which seems to be taking longer and longer than what everyone was wishful for. So volatility is here, and I don't see it going anywhere soon.
So with the activity in the equity market, is this what we expect going into the end of the year now, just continued more of the same, or is this just isolated right now?
I would say it's more of the same. We're going to see volatility, and that's what VIX futures, if you look when you're out, they're saying that volatility is going to remain for the next year. Now, obviously, a lot of that has to do with the election and what happens there, both with the presidential side and in Congress. So possibly after the election, we see things kind of level out. But once again, then we're just going to be right back to what's happening with the virus.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we have to look through the third quarter earnings, and there's still parts of the economy that are shut down.
Right.
And it's going to impact earnings.
Yep. And I have friends in the restaurant industry, and they're saying that after the initial peak, they are seeing things slow back down again as people, you know, obviously we're excited to get back out. Yeah. But my fear is once we hit the traditional flu and cold season is you're going to see even more retraction of consumers who just want to play it safe.
Yeah. Same in the travel. When I was traveling last week and I talked to every airline worker, they all said the same thing, is that July was activity was picking up and they're starting to see decline again.
Yep.
Now that's anecdotal, but you saw that the airline industry basically is lobbying the White House for additional.
They need it.
Stimulus. Yeah. It's a broken business model when your flights are down 80%?
80%, yeah. And Southwest just announced they're going to keep middle seats open through November.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even if you're flying, that plane is not full.
The parking lot at Indianapolis Airport, I mean, it was amazing. It was just totally open.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it like that in years. So let's talk about international. So this international space has been a challenge. You go back 25 years ago, and the emerging market piece of the international. So international is broken up into developed countries and emerging market countries. We're going to talk about the emerging economies, but our approach and our models has always been to basically weight 2/3 developed, 1/3 emerging. Now those are rough numbers, but we always overweight the developed countries because that's where the growth has been. Emerging economies grow when capital is flowing, and capital is flowing into emerging economies. It comes either from banks or it comes from public issuance. And prior to the financial crisis, the European banks were the primary lenders to the emerging economies. Now, with public access, the emerging economies, and that includes Turkey, South Africa, BRICS, obviously, yeah, Brazil, right. Russia, India, and China are the biggest, but South Korea and Mexico. So they can access the markets directly now. However, that the debt burden has increased and their growth has been slow. It was slow into 2019, and it's obviously been hurt significantly by the coronavirus. What's happened, though, and you alluded to this in the opening comments, is that China now represents a large portion of the emerging market index. Do you have the numbers handy?
China makes over 65% of emerging markets now.
Wow. So when we talk about diversified emerging markets, we're really trying to capture these smaller countries like South Africa, Mexico, and Indonesia and Philippines that have this potential for growth. But when the index is that dominant by one country, it becomes idiosyncratic. It's not diversified, right? Do you have the largest issuers by chance?
I can basically know them offhand. I know the top two are Alibaba and Tencent. Those make up 15% of the index themselves. Then you go down the line. It's a little bit of South Korea as well. You got Taiwan Semiconductor and Samsung, which is South Korean. Those are your top four. And then you start to get into some of the smaller ones, predominantly all Chinese.
It's the same issue that we have with the S&P 500 is the top three or four names represent 20% of the index, and they're focused in this Asian marketplace. That's not the emerging market.
No.
So the question is, what do you do with that? So we would use active management has been difficult alongside the index managers, the ETFs. So we would use ETFs to keep costs low, capture the beta. And by the way, the market basis, excuse me, but it's worked.
It has worked.
And even though emerging markets have lagged, you pointed out, what were the numbers that you had? If you had China removed from the index, what would it be?
So if you remove China, it'd be down almost 10%. If you just held China, you're up, just like the S&P, you're up 6.5%.
Right, and that you're capturing this Alibaba, Tencent, that kind of move. So we benefited from that. The question then is, what do we really want to do, and how do we want to manage that risk going forward? So that's what we're... Well, here's where we're at, is... We're looking at a structure where developed countries and emerging markets are part of that basket, but China is a standalone piece of the emerging market, or I'm sorry, of the international component, and we take it out of the emerging markets basket. We treat it as a separate entity, and we focus exclusively on what we're trying to capture with emerging markets. Because in this business, you want to pick your index. You don't want the index to pick you.
Yep.
The index now has morphed into something that it was never really intended, and so it's got so much idiosyncratic risk now with the concentration of Alibaba and Tencent that if we isolate that, then we can really start to build around it, and then that's kind of the direction that we're heading into the end of the year. The other is China is the second largest economy.
Yep.
The third largest bond market.
Third largest, yeah.
Third largest bond market in the world. But it's considered an emerging market. And I think in Winthrop Capital Management, we call it a tweener. It's not an emerging market, but it's not because of its form of capitalism. And it's not integrated into the financial system, how they've managed their currency. There's a number of issues that it doesn't qualify as a developed country. So to treat it as an isolated piece, I think as a separate entity in the international sleeve might make some sense in terms of how we structure international and manage risk. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, same thing. I definitely would say it's no longer traditional emerging markets. And just to put numbers and valuations behind that, I mean, obviously we know the U.S., S&P 500 is trading at 26 times earnings. We've talked about developed countries. There's really no value there. I mean, the German DAX is trading at 39 times earnings. The U.K. FTSE is trading at 112 times earnings. So Europe is just a train wreck, and there's really no value there, even though it's down. Japan looks okay at 38 times earnings, but really where you see any value at all is you look at China is trading at 20 times earnings. And when you look at just looking at Bloomberg consensus estimates, GDP growth for China next year is supposed to be 8% growth. So you've got a decent valuation, decent growth. But when you look at other emerging market countries, like Brazil is only expected to grow 2.5% next year. Russia's 3%. I mean, those are not the growth numbers you're really looking to get compensated for the volatility in emerging markets. So I think it makes a lot of sense to just take China out of the picture.
So we'll put some structure behind that over the next quarter, and then we'll put some research piece out on that also. So we'll have some support for that for the FA's listing. All right. What else do we got? Anything else on your end? Credit markets?
Yeah, just on credit markets. I mean, rates were down. Up just a little bit last week. The long bond ended the week at 145. So, you know, rates are still low. Negative yielding debt is still $15 trillion. You still have negative yielding 10 years in Germany, France, Sweden, and Japan. It is difficult to find yield anywhere, which I think you're seeing more and more people driven into other asset classes. We've seen spreads compress on commercial mortgage-backed securities as people are just chasing yield. But on this international side, same thing. Just looking at Chinese government bonds, they're trading at 3.12%. That yield seems really low for something like China. But if you look at how it's traditionally traded relative to U.S. debt, traditionally over the last 5 years has traded with about 115 basis point difference to U.S. 10 years. And right now the difference is 240 basis points. So while low, compared to the U.S. 10-year, it is actually trading at 5-year wide. So just a place to look, the caveat there is obviously Chinese debt is a different animal. You're stepping into a lot of risk. But we're just looking at other areas and other places to find relative value.
Yeah, and this is you can't predict this. You can't manage a portfolio to this. But the concern, and this we'll close with this thought, but the concern is the rising geopolitical risk. And when you look at what's going on in the South China Sea and the aggressiveness of China, you saw the military flyovers.
Yep.
When we had our state person over last week. And then you look at the friction between North Korea and South Korea. You look at the friction in the Middle East, the Europe, and the Brexit issue is going to be difficult. But and then the Russia, the just the amount of instigation that comes out of Russia. So it's just the rising just friction in the global markets is history shows it doesn't end well. Right. And so it's going to be problematic as we build out. And I think, you know, we talk about our democracy, our form of democracy and how it's evolving. It's going to be a challenge to our democracy. As a state-controlled capitalism, like you see in China and to some extent in Russia, is where the countries own.
It's difficult to compete with them, right?
So that's really, I think, at the essence of what's happening is this: our business model versus their business model, and the challenges that we have, and what that does to issues around human rights, global poverty. And that's one of the issues that the pandemic's going to cause is a significant increase in global poverty around the world.
Yep.
So anyway, with that, let's close it down for the week. We will talk to you during the week. You guys have a great week. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.